All right. Good morning. Welcome to the roundtable and to our panel discussion this morning. Very nice to have you with us on this Wednesday morning, the 1st of March. We're down 2 months. Can you believe it? March 1st, and here we are, and we welcome you. We have a lot to talk about today. There was a big speech last night. We have a lot of things that we want to talk about regarding that. We welcome your thoughts as well. Panel at WAMC.org. Panel at WAMC.org. Let me introduce that group to you and begin with Dr. Alan Chartok, who joins us from the the Great Barrington Bureau.
The sick bed.
The sick bed, right, where he is laid up with a broken ankle, and hopefully it's elevated over his heart, meaning his leg, not his... Yeah. And you're all right?
Well, at least you admit that I have a heart. And of course, my new nickname is my new nickname is Leg Up Chartok.
There you go. Well, we always look, you gave us all a leg up, so thank you. Welcome.
Thank
good
you.
Morning. Rosemary Romeo is here. She is the director of the journalism program at UAlbany. Good morning.
Good morning.
Very nice to have you here. Rich Onan joins us. He is the he is a corporate attorney, and he joins us most Wednesdays, and it's a thrill to have you here, sir.
Great to be here.
Thank you very much. All right. So the President of the United States gave a speech to the Congress yesterday, and it was a very here is what people are saying. As his first address to Congress, he called for help in rebuilding the nation's infrastructure and military, also raised new questions about his policy priorities and how he plans to achieve them, especially on immigration. The quick reaction, the spot reaction, was that he was A, presidential. He gave a good speech, a very typical State of the Union type speech, a laundry list that doesn't have a lot of details, which is sort of the way those speeches go. And he, and many were shocked, I think even in his own party, that he acted like a politician and even a president of the United States. Alan, what did you make of it?
Well, first of all, I think the guy's full of baloney, because I get no sense, in my typical fashion, because I get no sense that anything means anything. He says, first of all, he sits down with the anchors of the TV shows, and he says, we got to work out this immigration thing and where people can stay in the country if they've been here and their kids could stay here. And then he gets up and he goes back to the old ways. Well, yeah, he wasn't Trumpian in the speech. On the other hand, nothing means anything, because he goes back and forth, and I don't get it. I don't know what it all comes out to be. So that's behind my thinking.
I understand that, and I think there are a lot of questions. And the only thing I would add to it is that I certainly see those inconsistencies, but a lot of times in these speeches, there's a lot more questions at the end than there are at the beginning. Rosemary, what did you?
Well, I want to defer to Rich. On my Facebook page today, people are saying, I wonder what dirtbag on WAMC will attack this a very successful speech first. And I think there's a lot to
so
that.
So you don't want to be first.
I can attack it. I have points all along that I take umbrage with. But 69% of people in the poll last night that CNN did approved of the speech. It was by far his best speech as a politician ever. He began really strong by saying, condemning anti-Semitism. There was much to admire in the speech. And so before we get into the nitty gritty, my views are well known, so it's not going to be surprising that I can nitpick it. But I'd like to hear from Rich, who can do justice to how well he did do last night.
No, I think that I think I agree with you. I watched the speech this morning. So one of the things I have the benefit of being able to do, so, you know, I go to the gym at, 5:15 or whatever. And so I could see what CNN has on the banner. And when you walk in, you can see, immediately what they're saying about Trump. And when CNN's banner was something like Trump addresses Congress, I said, wow, he must have knocked it out of the park for them to have something that benign. And yeah, I agree with Rosemary. I mean, you know, the bar, he personally has set the bar pretty low. And so he rose to, you know, pretty much the level that everybody, I mean, every presidential speech is basically some fairly tall male who's not bald reading a speech that somebody else wrote off of a teleprompter.
That's so true. That's very funny.
Right.
And he did that.
Yeah. In fact, there was in some of the commentary that we saw last night on the cable news shows that, you know, this wasn't, there was a question of, was this a Bannon speech? Was this a Ivanka Kushner speech? Yeah. And the consensus was, yes, it was.
I liked Brian Williams' characterization, oddly, one liar judging another. And Brian Williams said this was Steve Bannon content delivered in a sweet tone.
Like,
you know,
a Kellyanne Conway tone.
Yeah. Yeah.
Well, so, you know, to Alan's point, though, so what does it ultimately mean? You can have a speech, and will it be meaningful? I mean, I was shocked. I was watching CNN last night, and Van Jones said, well, if he keeps doing this, he'll be president for 8 years. I was like, okay, that seems
exactly.
Like we're doing a little bit, you know, we're going a little bit putting the cart ahead of the horse here, because there's still the content, right?
Well, there is, but the scary thing, if you're on the opposition side, the scary thing is, wow, if he could actually do the presidential card, you know, if he could play that role, you know, that becomes a scary thing for folks trying to oppose him.
I think he's quite the showman, and he showed that in many ways last night. One was, indeed, he acted the presidential role. He looked presidential. He delivered the speech correctly. And that is a low bar, but he's never done that in 2 years.
Well, that's what I was going to say. I would argue for the first time.
Yeah,
I mean, the first time. The first time. I agree with
right
that.
Right after he won, he actually did
well,
it,
that
too.
One he did. Well, then the third, because the first time he really did it was the Israel, the speech among AP. To AIPAC, which was the first, the Jewish PAC, it was the first time he actually read a speech off of a teleprompter about, you know,
okay,
relations
but not
with
as president,
Israel.
Right? That was during the
correct,
campaign.
Correct.
Okay.
Yeah, I don't recall that one as well. But
Alan,
well, dirtbag here. I just wanted
yeah, that's
to
what be- they called us, Alan.
That's
yeah,
really
dirtbag
unkind.
Here.
Really?
I just call
us the haters.
I just want to make a point. And that is that one of the reasons his numbers were so high in reaction to the speech is there was an exhaling of breath because, you know, he made a certain amount of sense and people were relieved. They said, okay, we're not heading towards fascism. You know, he does seem to be pulling it back on immigration and some of these other things, and therefore, and health care. And so people said, okay, oh my God, that's good. Now, remember, there are three groups in America. There are the Republicans. They are over 90% in approval of anything that Trump says or does, press, anything else. There are the Democrats. They're up there in the same sort of stratosphere against anything that Trump says, and they're not going to really change. But there are the guys in the middle, and those are the people who allegedly won this election for Trump. I say allegedly because Hillary, I never forget to say, got more votes. And those are the people who I think the Trumpistas were aiming at last night, and I think it was a hit with those folks because they were coming over to the other side little by little by little, the independents, saying this guy's really a nut.
I want to keep making this point because I think this is the case with so many of these State of the Union type speeches where, and still State of the State in any of them, where they give a whole laundry list of different things. It's very short on specifics, and which has been a charge leveled against this administration and this president from the beginning of okay, you're saying a lot of things of how we're going to do and we're going to make them great again, but how are you going to do that? And not much of that was released last night. Also, as Alan pointed, there were the contradictions too, where earlier in the day he said one thing and later he seemed to
it seemed a little stronger.
It wasn't what he was saying before, as if releasing and bringing up that point.
There's a certain amount of magic that he's conjuring up. Like, if he really can give significant cuts to business and individual middle-class taxes in America and put the $3 trillion needed into infrastructure and build up the military, wow.
And
okay.
The wall.
And the, oh, yeah, the wall. I forgot the wall. He also promised that. That would be extraordinary, and there doesn't seem to be a way to do that that's logical to me. His budget is coming out soon. That will be worth looking at. I want to make one major criticism that I have to. When he put Ryan Owen's widow on display, I hate that. He did it with the Benghazi, the mother of the Benghazi diplomat who was, they're just unhinged with guilt. Here's this woman sobbing, talking to her husband up in the sky. Obviously, the family is conflicted. The Ryan Owen is the man killed in the botched Yemen raid. The father won't even talk to the White House, but the wife, in good military wife fashion, allows her husband to be honored, supposedly, by the president. She had to do that, and yet he totally exploited her. There's this long, sustained applause, and then he has the gauche in the middle of the speech to say, I just have to say that's the, you know, the world's longest history for applause in a presidential speech. Give me a break. It was that was one unpresidential moment, and I, because I've spoken before about that exploitative thing for television, I want to bring it up.
Yeah, I don't disagree. I don't know that that's not a technique that has not been used before, right? I think that's...
Well, by Trump himself,
But also in lots of presidential, State of the Union or whatever.
I think Rich is right. They always have somebody up there. And it's always weird when it's a
victim.
It's
going to sound awful. There's always a widow, right? There's always
a victim
somebody,
of something.
A victim of something who a family member has died or something. It's
awful. Yeah. I want to ban that practice.
Yeah.
And then they had Denisha. She was the young black girl who's a friend of Betsy DeVos. Apparently, they knew one black woman to present who had managed to do well despite our horrible education system that's about to be fixed. Another thing that will require money. So, yeah, I have to say I thought he sounded like a president. And then when you begin thinking about it, it's like, oh, man.
Yeah, which is
yeah, but you know.
Go ahead, Alan.
But you know when you get, I'm sorry. But you know when you get this business of looking carefully at how they're going to fix Obamacare, for example, and I've said it before, and I'll say it again: the idea of setting up health savings accounts—that's a riot. Who's got money to put into a health savings account on the lower end of the social economic spectrum? Nobody. So to say that's okay, or to say let's sell this stuff across state lines, mm-hmm. which will of course negate what's going on in terms of rules in the various states. That's the end of that. So much for federalism and the new federalism when that's happening. So if you take a look at each of these proposed fixes, they are really in contrast to what he's saying he's mm-hmm. going to do. Mm-hmm. I mean, that's not repeal and replace. When Betsy DeVos starts talking about giving people the ability to go to any school they want, that's not going to help desegregate American schools. It's going to make it worse. Mm-hmm. And so we know that.
Yeah, and I think, look, this venue is not a venue for specifics, and I say that
right,
both for
true.
Trump and for everybody else. And yes, I know everybody gets mad when I compare what Trump did to what Obama did, but I went back to his first State of the Union speech to Obama's first, and it was obviously better presented because he's a better speaker, and he did more extemporaneous things. But he promised 3.5 million jobs in 2 years, going to cut the deficit in half. Large
goals.
Themes. But I will disagree with some of those goals. But I mean that this is not the venue for us to get into policy analysis.
I don't fault him for that. Let's talk about the Democrats' behavior. There was much speculation going into it that they would be ill-behaved, like South Carolina's
fine.
Distinguished Joe Wilson, who yelled out "You are a liar" to Obama in the worst display ever of congressional misbehavior. But they sat stone-faced through a lot of it.
I think the guy who hit Sumner Brooks over the head with the cane in, you know, 1865.
Yeah, that might contend too. Yeah, right. Go back into the last century. They sat stone faced. Many the women, the Democratic women, wore white for the suffragette color, standing up for women's rights. Many of them had blue ACLU pins.
Right.
Al Franken had the best look of the evening, sitting there kind of with this half amused grin. They chortled aloud at the idea of ending this trivial fight. Like, yeah, we just brush them aside. They groaned aloud when he mentioned Voices, a new victims of immigrant crime group that he plans to set up or has set up, he says. But overall, they gave the speaker the respect he deserves as the president of the United States.
Yeah, I thought that their protest was effective. It was respectful, but effective. And I liked what they did.
I did not like the Democratic response. I understand.
What was that? Talked about this yesterday, but we had a letter from a listener yesterday who said, you know, why wouldn't you take the opportunity to look at future leadership within the Democratic Party?
That listener was right.
And boy, when you watch this, so you have this former governor from Kentucky sitting in a diner, just like a deer in the headlights, and it was so poorly. I mean, no offense to him. I mean, I think it was fine. It's just it's a thankless job.
Yep.
But It was just ineffective, and it was
it's old. He's a 72-year-old retired guy too. To speak for a party that's supposed to be looking forward, looking younger.
What was the thought on having a retired politician do that?
Chuck Schumer got up on and spoke to CNN and MSNBC last night and said that the rationale was basically to hone in on the Affordable Care Act, and it was geographic in Kentucky, as Alan was talking about yesterday, the importance of that, but also that it was something that was important to that particular issue. But I think it don't you think, Alan, that it just came off as really tone deaf?
Yeah. By the way, the response is never any good.
No, that's true.
They were with Obama. They're not here. You know, they look for cheap tricks. I have to say, I heard Mike Pence on the Morning Joe this morning. I hate to admit that I listen to that sometimes because I don't like that guy.
Hey, Alan.
But I like. Yes.
Let me just pause you there, and I'll cue you to talk about Mike Pence when we come back. We just have a quick break for the news.
I appreciate it.
And we will be right back and continue our conversation after this short break. Good morning. Welcome back to the roundtable and to our panel discussion. For those of you watching online, Rich is dancing it out, and it's really good. WAMC.org to watch Rich dance during the breaks. Let me get to some of the letters, and then... Oh, Alan, Mike Pence.
I was just going to say, Joe, that I thought that Pence was extraordinarily well-spoken. Now, I don't always agree with Pence's agenda, and I certainly don't agree with his support of Trump. Nevertheless, the guy is really smooth, when it came to Trump's sort of antics, he was people like him because he's real. On the other hand, when it came to the substantive stuff, he really knows how to sell it in a way that Trump never has. You know, I was struck by something we were talking about yesterday, in which Trump sees himself as an A president with a C minus, with a C minus communication ability, meaning that whoever's got an early lead on in the pool on Spice's
yes.
demise was probably right. But I have to say, I think that the vice president is really a very good speaker.
And they do tend to they put him out there a lot.
Yeah. He's their Biden.
Yeah,
right? He's friendly with the Congress. He's a former radio guy, right?
Yes.
So he obviously knows what he's doing.
Yeah, and he also and I think he's friendly with the press. I mean, even if he
doesn't call them
on.
The enemy of the people.
Right.
Yeah, I think he knows,
made that clear.
He knows how it works. He knows that people need access. He knows that people need quotes.
He's a politician.
Yeah, he's a professional.
He's got
a professional.
Experience.
Yeah.
You know, that thing that we didn't want? He has it. It works well.
Brian writes, I listen every morning and I'm just wondering, when can we move away from all the Trump talk and maybe start discussing Capital District politics?
Amen, brother. I'll do that all day. Just saying.
What about Capital District politics should we be talking about?
Capital District?
We're getting a lot of mail on, will Albany be treated fairly by Governor Cuomo.
So that's one thing.
Are the cities getting the kind of money that they need in order to move ahead? That's the kind of stuff that I suppose people want us to talk about. You know, Albany is what I call an estuary city, just like the Hudson River, right? The salt water flows up, then the salt water flows down. The legislature comes into town, then the legislature leaves. And it has more nonprofits like ours than anybody. And it can't balance the budget. And as a result, the services are inadequate. And that doesn't only apply to Albany. Syracuse makes the same argument. Rochester makes the same argument.
Buffalo makes the same argument. But Alan, the more so here. And I think one of the reasons you're seeing some focus on this is both the mayor and, you know, our local legislative leaders have reached out both to business leaders and to others, you know, over the last few days and weeks to try and, you know, shed some light on this issue of, you know, Albany does a lot for the state. You know, we have a lot of state buildings here. We have a lot of exempt property. Mm-hmm. We have a lot of people using Albany city resources for good reasons, like mm-hmm. the legislature, and because
not paying for it.
And you know, there's an imbalance there. So I could understand. I think it would be fair for, you know, the state to pay a little bit. I hate to sound like a non-conservative, but the state should maybe pay its fair share in you know, helping Albany, you know, accommodate the legislators and everybody else who comes up here.
And on the other hand, before we hear from people about why don't we pay more into it, well, you know, this is not an invidious comparison, not much. But the, you know, the WMHT moved out of the city and had a chance to come into the city. Here we are. We're doing a great deal for Albany. We are, in many ways, one of the best things that Albany has. So there's a certain trading that goes on. Our presence here doesn't demand, because they would have to pay a great deal of money to get a radio station with 29 repeaters in Albany, and I think they know that.
I want to go back to the letters. David writes, let me get this straight. Trump runs amok for going on 2 years, excoriating everyone and everything, controls himself for one speech, and all of a sudden we're supposed to welcome the birth of a statesman? And Alan's words, give me a break. Joseph writes, I'm a little dismayed at the response to the president's speech. The man is 70 years old. He reads a speech written by someone else and finally behaves like an adult rather than a vicious teenager, and the press falls all over him. Man, have we lowered our expectations. Brian says, I understand the savings accounts places the responsibility back in the citizen, but that is hard when we are underemployed. Some Republicans want child savings accounts and for daycare and school. Again, great idea to place power back in the citizens' hands, but with bad banking practices, this will leave citizens on the lower spectrum at a disadvantage.
But, you know, the savings accounts have gotten beat up the same way that school choice, I think, has gotten beat up. And I would say the same thing for both of them, that they are both small pieces of a fix to a larger problem. I don't think anybody's saying health savings accounts are going to fix Obamacare. And I don't think, I'm
then
not
how
sure.
Come they put it up front? Then how come they put it up front every time they talk about what repeal and replace is? Savings accounts are at the front of it if it's just such a small piece.
Because do you really want them to talk about the percentage of Medicaid reimbursement on a per capita basis on a state by state? I mean, they couldn't get through that sentence as a talking point.
I would give you more credence if I weren't watching Betsy DeVos make choice the absolute centerpiece of her education policy, even to the point that she saw historically black colleges as a pro-choice, wonderful. I'm so pro-choice. I'm switching to abortion. Sorry, as a school choice measure.
Yeah, that was a
gaffe.
We'll get to that.
But that
was a big swing and a miss.
Yeah.
Put another way, segregation forever.
Yeah.
That's what the
segregation
message
is good
is.
For us. Made us stronger. Jeez.
Christina writes, Trump's misleading comments regarding the number of foreign-born terrorists while admitting the number of white nationalists committing hate crimes in Trump's name is particularly frightening, asking for us to come together in a speech that continues the lies and the divide. Cody says, an instance of a racist, misogynist, self-professed sexual assaulter parroting right-wing talking points makes a sane, measured president? Not. Trump should be viewed in aggregate based on everything he has said up to now, not by simply resetting since political play card on February 28th. Kathy says the fact that people think Trump did such a great job because he didn't go off the speech, was able to read through an entire speech without making his usual digressions, that he kept it to the generalities and his lies to a minimum, shows what a low bar has been set for him. Before we get all excited, let's see what he says in his next tweet, in his next rally, or in his next unrehearsed remarks. Can't.
All agreed.
All agreed. Yes.
All agreed.
Okay.
Yeah.
All agreed.
Let's see. We do have, I just want to say, I had one here that I had. Yes. Of course, the panel was hoping Trump would fail last night, but he didn't. He was great. Even some of the bitter, sore loser Democrats applauded and stood up a few times. Well done, President Trump, says Denise. Thanks to Rosemary for stating there was much to admire in his speech. Now I will brace for all her negative comments.
Well, one of them is that there weren't a whole lot of Democrats standing. It was just that fake Democrat from West Virginia who was on his feet as much as the Republicans.
The fake Democrat.
Mnuchin.
Joe Manchin?
Joe Manchin. Yeah. That's how you say his name, yes.
Let's see. Ildo says, I don't get it when some Republican try to make it sound that all immigrants are criminals, like they are here to destroy our country. They use one or two stories to justify the point. I would quote Mr. Trump, what do you think we are? What do you think? We are so innocent? When he was asked about Putin, we have American killings, Americans every single day. Michael says at this point, why listen to anything the president says? What we need to do is watch what he does and vigilantly. There you will find an iron consistency. In fact, you can chart this course. Brian, another Brian, says, spelled a different way, Trump's speech is meaningless. The press should ignore what he says and investigate and report on what he actually does. What orders or laws did Trump sign yesterday? What is he distracting us from? Which is certainly a point that Rosemary has made many times.
Don't need to make it again. Thank
okay.
you.
But
all right.
They're both right. You get measured by acts.
And we did talk about this a little bit, but Darlene says, I'd like to hear your opinions on voice.
Horrible. And that's why a groan went up from the Democratic side. It's just what the last listener said. It's trying to build up the actually very few crimes committed, statistically speaking, committed by immigrants. That is not to diminish the pain that goes to any victim of those crimes, but to turn it into a scourge of the earth, the world is dark and the sky is falling, which is what Trump is trying to do to justify his draconian measures against undocumented workers, is appalling.
Want to take a break? Two quick things.
So what do you think? Sure.
Let's just take a break. Two quick things before we do that. One is that we got a letter that said, watching and wow, Rich can move. Love you. Also, breaking news is that the Dow soars 200 points and is topping 21,000 for the first time ever following Trump's speech. So we will watch that today as well. We will be back after this short break. Ed Grimley there, Rich. Very nice.
That was my dad embarrassing his daughter dance.
Well, you embarrassed us.
Yes, right? Yeah.
I know. I think I'm blushing.
Alan, I can't wait till you're back and you can see this.
What makes you think I'm not watching?
that's true. That's very true.
I think it's a point well worth. It's a point well worth emphasizing for all those people who don't think that radio is good enough for them. They have to be visual. You can always watch WAMC. Go, you know, our streaming. It's amazing. We do things here that nobody ever thought of doing, like Rich dancing.
Yes, that's right. And he
and never will think of doing again.
Well, thank you for making it entertaining for our viewers. I appreciate it. Let's go on to some other topics. We just want to hit a couple of things real quick before we leave the political, and then there's some of the other things that we want to talk about. Let's mention Betsy DeVos. We touched on this story a moment ago after backlash. Betsy DeVos backpedals and remarks on historically black colleges, facing a fierce backlash after she called historically black colleges and universities, quote, real pioneers of school choice. Betsy DeVos, the education secretary, spent Tuesday afternoon backtracking on the controversial statement and highlighting the institution's roots in racism and segregation. Ms. DeVos, in a series of Twitter posts on Tuesday and in remarks at a luncheon with presidents from some of the schools, repeatedly acknowledged that the schools were not created simply to give African-American students more choices, but because black students across the country were not allowed into segregated white schools. The controversy is the latest gaffe for Ms. DeVos, who has had, by all accounts, a rough start.
This is why you don't put rank amateurs and people whose only qualifications are they have a lot of money into high office. Thank you, Republicans.
Yeah, but someone, agreed. But someone's going to be the punching bag, and I think you know if the punching bag is
she's
education.
Earning the honor. Come on, you know, Rich. Then, come on, you cannot put a good face on this.
No, I'm not. No, I'm saying somebody's going to. But if she's getting the attention, then it means that HHS is not. And right, and EPA is not, and places where Trump is focusing his policy agenda.
So you're saying
not.
It's another distraction?
I'm saying that he probably wishes that she was doing a little bit better, but if he had to pick somebody to not be doing well, he doesn't necessarily mind that it's education.
So it's better
that's what I'm thinking.
It's better than a Michael Flynn.
Yeah, don't you think,
Alan?
Well, you know, Rosemary has always been one of my great heroes because of her ability to sense sexism where it exists or even where it doesn't exist. Nevertheless, I find it amazing, Rosemary, that you don't see the sexism in slapping her down in terms of everything she says. Let's face it. We just had a great example of it the other day when she talks about, LGBTQ treatment in bathrooms, and she doesn't agree that it's a good thing to cut that out. And he says, no, you're wrong, basically. Trump says, go away. And now we find the same thing here. Where's the defense of the education secretary, one of the few women in the group?
I think that Trump is a horrible bigot against women. And if you watched last night, you saw Nikki Haley batting her eyes saying, oh, what a difference a year makes. How great he is. You saw, what's her name, Department of Transportation.
Chow.
Yeah. Looking at him with Nancy Reagan eyes. Yes, he and his wife and his daughter are the same. He demands adulation from his women, and that's it. But in this case, I think he agrees with her. I don't think he is a big champion of black colleges or knew what was going on or cares a whit about our history. I wish Barbara Smith were here to talk about that. I think he agreed with her and was as surprised as she that anyone took umbrage at what she said.
Yeah, I don't know how he could not. I don't know how somebody. I hear what you're saying, Alan, but she doesn't get, just because she's a woman doesn't mean she gets a pass when she makes. I mean, to basically say that these colleges were, you know, pioneers of choice is like saying that, well, you know, people chose to work on plantations and, you know, what a great choice that was.
Yeah,
you know?
it was a really good stable social system. And geez,
well,
I don't know.
Well, that's exactly a point I made earlier in the program. You may remember.
Yes.
You know, this segregation forever idea, you know, that's good stuff. But I do want to remind everybody that sexism and bigotry exists in both political parties.
Yeah.
Oh,
I agree.
There's no in all parties, in all aspects of our society. And I did hear, Alan, and dispute your idea that I see sexism where it doesn't exist. I see it where it does exist.
Right. No, it does. Let's leave that alone. And let us just move on from that.
All right. A ruling. Hug
a
it
wise
out.
Retreat
hug
by,
it out.
By Alan.
God, my ankle hurts. Yeah, go ahead.
A ruling issued on Monday by a federal judge in Manhattan in a case brought by a freelance journalist without a lawyer may interest the White House. The judge said that the New York Police Department may have violated the First Amendment by revoking the press credentials of the journalist Jason Nicholas. The ruling was preliminary, and the police department said it had legitimate reasons for its actions, but the judge's decision was timely, following, as it did, the exclusion of several news organizations from a Friday briefing at the White House, bringing up the question, is barring reporters from briefings crossing a legal line?
Wow, is that a stretch. Wow, is that... Did anybody actually read the story?
I read the whole entire thing.
So this guy was a photographer who was interfering with a... Right? The guy was a photographer who had earlier been interfering with a crime scene slash accident scene when, you know, the police had, like, roped, you know, taped it off, and he was taking pictures, which they do, and he went...
But they felt he was compromising the evidence.
Yeah, right. And so they said, all right, you're done. And he's brought a bunch of these pro se, these lawsuits on his own. I get it, but I think that it's a stretch to go from him to, you know, the New York Times.
Let me just say very quickly that my favorite Law and Order episode, which I have talked to you guys about many times, is when the cop looks up at the perp and says, "Hey, this is Giuliani time." This is Giuliani time in America. We have the Attorney General of the United States getting up and saying, no, we're not going to go after police departments that commit heinous civil rights atrocities. We're backing off from that, says the AG. I mean, what do you think that's all about? When it gets to the new Trump Supreme Court, I guarantee you police will be exonerated for almost everything that they do.
The person who wrote this story is Adam Liptak, who's the Supreme Court writer for the New York Times. He is a lawyer, a very good First Amendment lawyer, as well as a journalist. And the article very much had the idea that he was exploring it. He made the connection. Right. I don't think anybody in government is. He made the connection between that case and the legal principle it brought out, which is that, yes, of course the government and anybody has the right under the First Amendment not to talk to the press. Obama would not talk to Fox because he didn't trust them. And Trump, you know, doesn't talk to anybody but Fox for the same reason. Perfectly legal under the First Amendment. He was pointing out, and he did talk to many people who said the same thing you did, Rich, that it's a stretch. But it is an argument that could go before the Supreme Court, that if you open up something as the White House press facilities have been open and that gaggle of information directly from the White House goes to everyone, you cannot exclude someone simply because of an arbitrary reason. Mm-hmm. And that will be argued in a Supreme Court with original thinkers.
I would be interested to see if this is part of a campaign. Let's see how many other stories we see by this reporter. Let's see if, because it might be, you know, the conspiracy theory here is that the Times is kind of mounting a campaign to show, you know, these what I think are fairly isolated and I think disparate examples of maybe, you know, one rogue photographer or journalist or maybe even a rogue, you know, police department that bars somebody. Let's see if they start, we see more stories like this and the Times starts to make it into a news item.
I don't think you're going to see rogue stories. I think you're going to see the Times championing legal approaches to attacks on the press. If you remember during the campaign, Trump threatened a libel suit against the New York Times for coverage of something, and it responded with a letter from its legal counsel that they publicized on the front page, right, saying, bring it on, you know, because we get discovery. We'd love to do this. So there is a very aggressive stance there. And is that inappropriate for a press that is directly under attack by the president of the United States?
No, that is not. But I want to see how many of other of these stories pop up in the Times. And then you'll get the story 3 months from now saying, oh, look at all of these incidents that have occurred. And it'll all be stories that the Times, you know, went out of its its way to find. Maybe they won't do that.
And let me,
that could be wrong.
And let me just say that when the New York Times, which is a very important newspaper, our most important newspaper, puts it on the front page or does raise those stories, it becomes important and sanctified by its very presence in the Times. And on an unrelated subject, well, I just get a chance to say it really quickly, I noticed a little blurb saying that Fox News is still the number one cable station over CNN and MSNBC, and that tells you a lot, especially in the community in which I live, where people tend to poo-poo it.
We are going to take a break.
Including me.
We're going to take a break. When we come back, we'll continue our conversation. We welcome your letters panel at WAMC.org. You look good. You really do when you dance.
We're going to do a duet soon.
Oh,
we're
you and Rosemary?
Some kind of.
Well, tell your partner.
I'll have to ask for concession. I'm for that.
No, I'm thinking like kind of like from my senior prom, like 1978, like disco fever kind of thing. You know, we could do one of those things. I'll find
a
white suit somewhere.
When you learn to moonwalk, okay? Then we'll talk.
Oh, now I feel bad because we're talking about dancing, and poor Alan can't even walk.
Yeah, that's true.
Yeah, but Rich can't dance, so it doesn't stop us from trying.
And I resent it very, very much.
Yeah, well, you have every right to be bitter about that.
You know what I resent? I still haven't gotten my First Amendment coffee cup, by the way.
You're looking at it right now.
No, well, is this mine?
No, see Colleen on the way out. It's standing by for you.
Yeah, see Colleen on the way out.
Okay, a couple quick letters, and then we'll move on to some other subjects that I want to get to today. Cheryl says, love the show. Love it more when Rich is on. He balances out the panel. Best regards to all. Joe and Connie, I don't know which this is from, say, if you want to reach the people in the heartland, you use a good old boy in a diner that speaks their language. A slick politician in a suit just turns them off. Plus, he was a two-term governor in McConnell's state. I think the decision to use him was very clever. Take a drive across the country off the beaten path and you will understand.
Well, Fox News is from diners almost every day. Right. Fox News is from a diner in a heart. They have somebody at a diner in the heartland almost every day, certainly several times a week.
What is this? Intellectuals eat in diners too, okay? I'm a professor. I eat in diners all over the Capital District.
Okay. What,
that's just a stereotype. You don't talk to people in diners only. You got to go talk to them in their homes, in their schools, in their churches, in their synagogues and supermarkets. Yeah. We just have to do better reporting. Sorry.
Paul says, another morning of 100% Republican Party news driven by the master of mass communication. The Democrats, nothing to report, no high-impact message, no leader, no presence. Essentially, the Democratic Party is irrelevant. We will assure an 8-year Republican tenure unless we create a disruptive and powerful leadership message and leverage every communication opportunity. Instead of making fun of the master of the media, we should be focusing on the leadership crisis / void of the Democrats.
Yeah. What are, I'm sure you guys have talked about this, but you know, who's on deck for them?
We have talked about it, okay. And we don't know. Right? I mean, I don't think we've ever come up with an answer to that.
Nope.
Nor have the Democrats. Okay. Trump is asking, says Linda, to increase the military budget by 10%, but has he said why? Is this for any purpose? Such a huge expense needs justification, and I, for one, just don't see it. This is a question you have brought up a few times.
Thank you, Colleen.
Colleen just brought in Rich's mug. Very nice. That's a point you have made.
What's the point I made?
Oh, okay. You were,
sorry,
you were,
I distracted you.
I know. I'm watching Rich get his. I was watching Rich get his mug. Sorry.
About the military budget by 10%, but has he
said
why?
Oh, yeah, the magic. Yeah. Why do we need it? We have the not just the biggest, most vast military right now, but in history of mankind. How many nuclear weapons do we need? What is this for? And the military itself says to build up the military at the cost of, say, the State Department, which would take a huge slash, supposedly, in his upcoming budget, does no one any service. That leaves the military as the only tool that you have to solve problems in the world. So it's just it's just not thought out well. I think.
Don't think there's any deterrent value to even having announced the increase in military spending? I mean, it seems to kind of bespeak a policy that
who are we deterring?
Hopefully.
Exactly.
Well, hopefully, you know, those who would seek to, you know, to either do us harm or to take liberties.
Our biggest enemy.
The Russians?
Yeah, like the Russians. Exactly. Yeah. Because we didn't do a real good job deterring them from the Ukraine or anywhere else.
We could have.
Oh, really?
We have the, had we opted to go on the ground or bomb, we certainly have the weaponry right now. We don't need to build up the military anymore. The reason we didn't go in there was for diplomatic reasons or for political will. Lack of military. Sorry. Go ahead, Alan.
Wait, have we forgotten Trump and the Russians? I mean, the Russians used to be the enemy. When he got elected, he started to talk about China in very negative terms. He said the North Koreans would not be allowed to go forward, and they just laughed and snickered and killed a guy in the airport. You know, I don't see who the enemy is that he's building up against. It certainly isn't his best friend Putin, is it?
You just named one of them. There was a big story, editorial yesterday in yesterday's Wall Street Journal, which, Alan, I know you don't read, but it was by Woolsey.
I do.
Talking about, don't underestimate the nuclear and military readiness of North Korea. It was written, I think, Woolsey? Is that his
name?
And talking about, just the fact that, you know, that they're showing 10 megatons or something in a test doesn't mean that it wasn't done in some hardened area where maybe it was more. And they were talking about their ability to deliver at least smaller nuclear weapons.
But, Rich, I'll grant you that they have 10 times what they say they actually do. We already are better equipped, better armed, better trained, better anything a military can be to take care of the matter now. It is not lack of military that prevents us from using military power. So building up more power to not use it in certain circumstances, it doesn't make any sense. We don't need to do that.
But you don't think just the announcement of an intent to build up is going? You don't think that's going to resonate anywhere
Do you think ISIS is more scared of us now, Rich? ISIS has no capability at all compared to ours, and still has managed to annoy us so much.
Yeah,
I think it's silly.
A madman like, the Korean madman? Has anything stopped him yet?
Well,
only thing that could stop him is China. And we know they've been trying, I think, to little effect. Hey, the day that this guy launches a big one somewhere, there won't be any more North Korea. And China knows it. And China sits right there next to North Korea. I think Rosemary is dead on here.
Now make me a list, Alan.
We have plenty.
Alan, make me a list of everything militarily we have done to stop North Korea. I'll stand around and wait.
That's exactly the point. We haven't done anything militarily because of the political and wider range risk, not because we lack in the things that Trump is now going to rip the budget apart to build up even more. We do not need the buildup. That's my only point.
Yeah, I disagree. I think that we do need the buildup, and the fact of the buildup, I believe, is going to have effect. We won't know it today. Now, by the way, even if he got everything he wanted, we're not going to have this stuff for 2 years anyway, right?
So I think it's Trump's general bellicosity that's increasing the danger in the world, and that may be to your point that he's out there huffing and puffing and pounding his chest and saying, "I'm going to build the military even more." Maybe that has a deterrent, but I don't see that we face that big a threat. I just do not.
Got him expelled for being a bully from school for punching a teacher. Come on now, give me a break. This guy is a big bully. I'm not going to use an adjective. He is just a big bully. And it's showing, as Rosemary just correctly indicates, in terms of his approach to the world stage. It makes no sense when we could be feeding people, we could be educating them, we could be doing mental health for them. But
dams.
No, we have to build more stuff.
Well, but that's what he says he wants to argue about, right? I'm sorry, that's what he says that he wants to do. He wants to shift funds to infrastructure and to spending more in America.
No, he didn't say shifting funds to infrastructure. He said shifting funds to military. But I want to stop talking about this.
Okay. So let's.
Okay.
Rosemary has spoken. Yep. So let's talk about this instead, which is shares of the parent company of Sterling Jewelers, which owns Jared and Kay Jewelers, plunged nearly 13% Tuesday and briefly halted trading after the Washington Post reported that hundreds of former workers had made claims of widespread sexual harassment and discrimination at the company. About 250 former employees allege in sworn statements that women were routinely groped, demeaned, and urged to sexually cater to their bosses to remain employed. A separate memorandum made public in 2013 specifically names the chief executive as a participant in the sexual impropriety. The statements are part of a private class action arbitration case that now involves 69,000 current and former employees. Attorneys for the former employees were granted permission this week to release those declarations publicly.
Makes Bill Cosby sound like a piker, doesn't it?
It's just Roger a staggering Ayers. Volume of, of plaintiffs. Yeah.
Okay, Alan, am I seeing sexism where it doesn't exist?
No.
I'm floored by this, the sheer number of it, the fact that the company's response, the holding company, Sterling Jewelry, which is a holding company for both those jewelry stores, their response was, no, this isn't really about sexual harassment. Those women only complained about being held down in promotion and pay, as if that's your defense. And the reason, I think one of the main reasons that that stock went down is think of how awful it is that men everywhere go to Jared's and K's. Kiss begins. Every K begins with K.
Every kiss begins with K.
Right. He went to Jared because they sell so many engagement
diamond
rings. Whether
you want it or
rings.
Not, apparently.
So give a loving gift from these purveyors of incredible sexual harassment and outright discrimination against women. I'm just staggered by this.
Yeah. What was it that just that broke this? Was it the releasing of the affidavits?
The Washington Post has been after this for years. Okay.
But it's the state. Statements that were finally the judge allowed that the attorneys said that the declarations could be made public. Yeah.
And this arbitration, which is over pay and promotion, has been going on since 2008.
Yeah.
So this is a company so arrogant that they don't settle. I mean, if you know this is going on, wouldn't you want to settle with the women right away?
You would think the number and look, I'm going to actually go back and I didn't have a chance to pull the complaint.
I'd love to hear.
Yeah, I would like. Yeah. I'd like to read it. The other thing is, it's hard to, usually when you have numbers, you know, in the thousands like that, you're talking about, it's based on some kind of employment discrimination, right? People were, because to physically harass people on that level tells me it almost had to be in the, it almost had to be at the retail store level, right?
They used to, according to the testimony, the corporate people would go around from store to store picking out the pretty women and then bring them to parties. This is like worse than Fox. Are there other companies like this at Opera? I'm floored. I really am. And I would like to point out that Mr. Light, who is the CEO in question, earns over $7 million a year. Oh.
Yeah. Big money in diamonds.
Yeah.
Well. I'm just sort of relating this to Rosemary's earlier comment, I think, about Cosby. You know, it's so interesting how everything can change in a minute. Think of the money that these companies spend on advertising, right? And in one fell swoop, 13% in the stock. Goodbye, advertising.
Yeah.
Goodbye, Mr. Wholesome America. It's amazing how fast it can all change.
Yeah. The amount of bad things that have come out of, you know, lawsuits not being settled. Mm-hmm. You know, you remember, go all the way back to, like, you know, Bill Clinton and Whitewater. I mean, remember that he had the chance to settle that case, not Whitewater, but he had the chance to settle those
Paul
harassment
Jones.
Cases. Yeah.
Slick early how he managed on. To get another Clinton. Banging. No, we're not even talking politics.
No, lots of them. On both sides. I mean, you know, the fact that you got to believe there was some kind of settlement discussion going on, and somebody said, no, we'll see you in court. And they said, no, we'll see you in the New York Times
or
the Washington Post.
To Rosemary's earlier point, though, their defense, the company's defense, is just unbelievable. Besides that, saying that the allegations, they say they create a distorted negative image of our company.
Yeah.
They say that it involves a very small number of individuals. 69,000 does not seem small to me.
And then further.
can't be. Then I'm saying it can't.
250 women are involved in the promotion and discrimination
in the
discriminatory
arbitration.
Pay, right? But further, the company says we've looked into these allegations and found they're completely wrong.
They say they go back decades. Well, that is a concern too, isn't it?
Some of these are really old. You've been doing it for years.
I'm sure what the company. I assume. I'm not sure. I assume what the company was trying to say was if they're, you know, in this day and age, if there truly were that many instances of, you know, what we think of as sexual harassment, as opposed to discriminatory, you know, hiring or true sexual harassment, you would think that there would be contemporaneous either filings or charges.
At Fox, which is not just contemporaneous, but happening to women who stand up for themselves.
But the numbers
everywhere.
I understand, but here the numbers are just so staggering.
Yeah. Anyway, I wanted to get that in because it's not just government that we have to keep an eye on. It's businesses. It's all the institutions that affect us in our lives. They have power over us. And I just feel so bad for those women who worked under circumstances that were so objectionable because they need the money, because you have to work.
Right. I will read the complaint and read
I'd
the declarations.
Love to hear that.
And next time I'm on, I'll report back.
Okay. That would
you
be
have
good.
Homework, Rich.
Yes.
All right. We have a few minutes and have time for a couple more topics. So let's go to the director of the Met resigned. Thomas Campbell resigned under pressure on Tuesday as the director and chief executive of the Metropolitan Museum of Art after months of growing concerns among staff members and some trustees about its financial health and his capacity to lead the largest museum in the country. Met officials said that Mr. Campbell would stay on until June, the end of the fiscal year, but that Daniel Weiss, the Met's president and chief operating officer, would be simultaneously serving as an interim chief executive. Mr. Weiss will work with Mr. Campbell and the museum's leadership on a transition plan while the Met seeks a new director, one of the most powerful in the art world. What happened here?
Joe, I have to disqualify myself from this discussion, not that it matters, because I'm a member of the Met, and only because Roselle made me be a member of the Met. And it is a hell of an institution. It's the largest museum in America, I think, maybe the world, America.
It's one of the world's, the largest one in the world.
Do you know what it costs? Do you know what it costs to, I don't, to be a member of the board of the Metropolitan Museum of Art? I know that in all of these major institutions, we're talking about millions of dollars to do that. And inevitably, it comes down to this, folks. It comes down to not we disagree with the pictures he's putting up or the exhibits he's putting up, because he did great exhibits. It comes down to whether or not there's enough money to run the place. And when you're giving $1 million or $2 million a year to that institution, you have a great deal to say about who's sitting up at the top of that of the place. And, you know, as my brother Lewis always used to say, some people on boards engage in what we call blood sport, meaning they go and they nitpick and they yell. But if you have a board where people are on board giving $100 million or $20 million, boy, I'll tell you, it's got to be dangerous. And one of the things in that article that I found fascinating was the whole idea that Hoving, who had been a great president, was forced out also before Campbell. So this they get a lot of money for doing what they're doing, but it's a tough thing. It's a tough job, I think.
It seems to be that the main issue seems to be that the attendance was soaring. They had record attendance, and yet they had these huge economic difficulties, including a deficit that was going out of sight. Rosemary?
Well, I want Rich to talk. He also had other problems. His staff didn't like him, and they're bad-mouthing him. You got your board talking against you. You got your workers talking against you. You're toast.
Yeah, and I think a lot of it, they named one of the, I think the guy was from Blackstone, I think, had a private equity person on the board. And, you know, this happens in the for-profit world as well. I'm thinking back to Hewlett-Packard, had big problems with its both with its governance, but the squeakiest board member wheels were like the venture capitalists, the private equity people, the hedge fund. You know, they have tons of money. You know, they buy their way in, and the first thing they look at obviously is finance. You know, that's what they know. I will say I love the Met. My brother works there. I'm there every time I'm in New York. You're right. It always seems packed. There's always some amazing. There's always like five amazing exhibitions going on, and you know, you just wonder. You feel like they should be able to make money. I can get how it costs a lot of money to run it.
Well, right? Including the director who makes $1.4 million, a lot less than the jewelry guy. But
right, yeah. But I just
interesting. Our society, money is the issue here, and this guy's out. And then we've got right. Mark Light in Sterling Jewelry, who's apparently responsible for the harassment of 69,000 women, and he's still in.
Yeah, which tells you they were probably making. You got to well, and that was
the jewelry stores.
Yeah, the jewelry stores were making money, right?
Oh yeah,
yeah.
Oh, yeah.
So.
From the point of view of a lawsuit, I just want to make sure, Rosemary, that everybody's entitled to the presumption of innocence until, because we can't say he's apparently responsible until there's some judicial adjudication of that, right? Or am I wrong?
Oh, well, you are right.
And that's why we agreed. I'm going to report back to Rosemary next week and tell you who's right and who's wrong.
All right. We will wait for that. A teaser, if you will. My thanks to everybody for participating. As always, we'll continue the roundtable after this short break.